All right, everybody, it is time for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. But before we dive in to our awesome, awesome guest and conversation today, I want to remind you guys of two things. And the first one is that if you go to crypto101insider.com, you can join our private community. Here's where we have our model portfolio and all of our top picks. We also have Crypto 101 University, where we have hours and hours and hours of written and video content that explains blockchain and explains cryptocurrency in a very bite-sized and easy to understand way. And we have a weekly newsletter that goes out and quarterly state of crypto addresses that go out. There is just a ton of value packed into this every which way. So I want you guys first to go to crypto101insider.com today, if you haven't already. I also want to remind you guys that Pizza Mind and I recently just finished a book. It took 11 months of our lives to write, and we're calling it Crypto Revolution, Your Guide to the Future of Money. We walk you through this fascinating world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain, and it's part history book, it's part instructional guide, and it's going to really show you guys why cryptocurrencies are globally disruptive and how they're going to actually change in real life and in real terms the way that we buy and sell and even live. We include a bunch of how-tos on getting started with your first exchanges. We give you tips on, you know, how to safely buy and sell and store cryptocurrencies, as well as how do we evaluate potentially good cryptocurrencies. And the best part of the book is that we're giving it away for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. So go to cryptorevolution.com and pick up your copy today. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the radio, gather around the speaker, wherever the heck you are, on the road, at home, maybe in school, whatever you are doing, guys, drop it all and tune in because we've got an amazing guest today. We're going to be talking about a whole lot today. It's going to be a fantastic conversation. Before we introduce our guest, let's check in with Mr. Aaron Pizza Mind Malone, my notorious co-host, the Mr. Pete's. How you doing, brother?
I am in exceptionally high spirits today, and that is because no matter what kind of chaos is going on in the world, it is nothing in comparison to what I'm going to be doing later, and that's going to see Rammstein live.
Are you serious?
Yes. As soon as this podcast is over, I'm hopping on a plane, I'm headed to the LA Coliseum, and I'm going to see Rammstein. I've had tickets that were bought 2 years ago and were delayed due to COVID, but now I'm sure they're more than going to make up for the lost time. This is going to be an epic rager. So this is the last time you hear me here at the Crypto 101 podcast because I died in a fire. Just know that I went out the way I wanted to go.
Yeah, the German metal band, right? Rammstein?
Yes, that's
fantastic.
Right.
Well, that's going to be exciting. It's going to be just about as chaotic as the markets are currently. Crypto kind of showing a little bit of strength, oddly, amidst just what seems like market turmoil in the bonds world and in the equities world. But we're going to dive into a little bit about that. But before we do, let's introduce our fantastic guest, Nick Swinmurn, who is actually the CEO and founder of Hellbore, which is a really cool new blockchain gaming system, as well as the founder and sold Zappos several years ago. So welcome, Nick, to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We're super excited to dive in. And I might have also forgotten to mention your most important affiliation, because we share the same alumni network, Go Gauchos.
Nice. Yep, that's the top of the pyramid.
Top of the pyramid. I saw your fellow UCSB grad. Love it. And we're going to dive in. First, let's just talk a little bit about your background and catch us all up. How did you end up here in the crypto and the, you know, sort of NFT world?
Yeah, no, I don't have the skill of being concise. So just cut me off whenever you want. But I've always just been curious, right? I think that's what led me there. When I graduated from UCSB, like we talked about, I had no plan. And I just thought sports might be fun, right? So I went in sports, and then, you know, okay, sports is okay. And what's this internet thing, right? So let me go get a job you know, at a company, AutoWeb, and then, ooh, why can't I do this myself? So I think it was just that common thread of curiosity, which led to trying lots of things, which led to starting a lot of things that failed, a few things that worked pretty well. And then, you know, I think you combine that with COVID, got back into, all I wanted to do as a kid was collect sports cards. You know, I was just down at my local store, Stamps in the Attic, every day, just buying and buying and selling and trading my whole collection for something. And this,
that's
that,
awesome.
So in COVID, I got back into that. Like, it seems like a lot of people did. That led me eventually to discover Top Shot. I'm not overly technical, so I liked the fact that, oh, well, I didn't really understand it first. Why would I want to highlight, right? But then I liked the fact that when I'm buying something, I know something's happening. It's going away. It's telling me it's going away to do something somewhere, which is over my head, but I don't have to worry about that. And then I bought it. And then from that kind of piqued my curiosity about NFTs in general. You know, started collecting those when you couldn't really collect poorly. Right? Everything you bought was going up. So I was like, wow, this is great. But eventually, you know, just that same curiosity was like this, you know, okay, I hear everyone talking about utility. I hear everyone talking about this, that, and the other. How many t-shirts do we need with the logo on the front? If I'm a holder, is that the peak of utility, you know? And so just kind of started looking at, you know, what could I do? What could I do? You know, where's the best place to start? How could I learn? So launched a small project with the idea of, well, hey, let's prove that we can mint something. Let's prove that we could airdrop something. Let's prove that we can, you know, let people claim things. Let's do a merch drop. Let's do these basic things and see if we can do it. I figured once you're doing it, you're doing it, right? You're not thinking about doing it. And then that just kind of led to going farther and farther, and really was the focus on just, you know, being curious, seeing incredible opportunity for all these ideas, right? I'd always been an idea person, whether it was, you know, tech, fitness, you know, clothing, food. I've opened restaurants, opened gyms, started clothing brands, like done tech stuff. And they all just seemed like they didn't make any sense together. So I always just saw them as a bunch of just random ideas. So the big thing I got was this realization of like, ooh, I think Web3, like, it can tie them all together, right? They can be connected in certain ways. And this is a new technology which could be applied to all these ideas. So just kind of started going from there. I've been a passionate sports fan, you know, thought, I think there's an opportunity to, you know, tap into real life events. So it's not the responsibility of creating all that content constantly. The world has a ton of content that people are already passionate about. How could we add a layer onto that, which would, you know, connect those outside passions and interests back to the project we're working on? So that was kind of how it got started.
I love your path and your progress just from being curious and wanting to ingest more information and stay on the edge of what's going on. But you didn't just sit there and read white papers or watch YouTube videos. You got hands-on experience. And I think that's something that I really want to invite all of our listeners to do, is you don't need $20,000 to buy a full Bitcoin and then put it at risk sending it to some address. You can get $10 in Tezos and spend a fraction of a penny and playing around trying to send it back and forth and doing, you know, different mints and NFT stuff on these really, really inexpensive chains like Tezos, like Polygon. Just for a couple examples,
Solana,
NFTs. Yeah, exactly. So it's not expensive to come play in the crypto world anymore. Get your hands dirty, keep your education cheap. Don't send everything all at once. But then once you understand what you're capable of doing, you can really make something cool. So tell us, what is Hellebore?
Yeah, so Hellebore is the first NFT powered play and earn sports prediction game. So we tried to take the best features of fantasy, traditional player-based fantasy, combine those with the simplicity of like pick 'em, and then add NFTs as a tool which will enhance the experience for the user, right? Add more value for the user. So it's a simple prediction game. You mint our NFTs, which are called the Cyber, little gremlin looking guys. And then you connect to the site and you're just presented with picks. So you might get a daily pick of like, hey, you know, who's going to win today? The Warriors or the Lakers, right? You make that pick. If you're right, you increase the rating of your cyber plus one. If you're wrong, it goes down one. And then as you level up your cyber, you open up more levels. And then when you get to the gameplay, those ratings tilt the odds in your favor. So you can start a league with friends, anywhere from 6 to 64 friends. Pick a sport. Right now we have soccer, football, and baseball, basketball, and hockey soon. And so you're just doing head-to-head every 28 days, 15 game days against your group of friends. And you're just kind of leveraging the ratings of your cyber to tilt the odds in your favor. Once you get past the very first level, we introduce the spread, right? So instead of will the Warriors beat the Lakers, it's will the Warriors beat the Lakers by more than 10. So if you apply your cyber to that, you've got really good ratings. You might be able to move that down to will the Warriors beat the Lakers by more than 5 for you to win instead of 10.
Wow. And is this something that like it's just you building and you're just in your house, you're coding, or have you gone and like, you know, hired a team of like blockchain experts to make, because it sounds, you know, it sounds very complex and very cool. And I know you also have a background in you know, sports. You're a minority owner of the Golden State Warriors. So it sounds like a perfect fit.
Yeah, no, I, you know, I kind of took the same approach, I guess, when we're talking to, you know, anyone can get started. Was a story I get, I guess, a lot of credit for was back in 1998, right? I thought about starting an online shoe store and I didn't have a bunch of money. I didn't have the ability to go out and really set up a business. So I just put up a simple website. I went down to my local shoe store and I said, hey, can I take, you know, actually I just went in and started taking pictures. And the guy's like, what are you doing? I was like, can I take pictures of these shoes? And I'm going to put them on my website. And if anyone buys them, I'm just going to come in here and buy them from you and ship it to them. And he's like, well, I can't give you a discount. You know, I'm a retailer, not a wholesaler. Like, I don't care. I don't need a discount. I will sell them for the same price I buy them from you for, because I just wanted to see, will people buy shoes, right? It's the same thing. You just got to get started and you've got to be doing something instead of talking about doing something.
Right.
And so that was an interesting first step there. And so,
and then that became Zappos, which is like, you know, by many metrics, the most popular shoe site in the world.
That became Zappos. I used that kind of first data to raise a little friends and family round. Actually it was just friends of friends, no family. And then, and then from there, we were kind of off to the races, you know, in hindsight, you know, in reality, it was a very slow, stressful, we might go out of business tomorrow, you know, years and years experience. Right. But afterwards I kind of took that same approach, just jumped in and just started starting things. And so was the same approach with Hellebore. I had been working on, I had a bunch of ideas that I would, you know, generally would come up with an idea and trying to come up with a name or a concept around it, kind of sketch it out a little bit. And a lot of things were in kind of stop start mode. We had a dev agency called Southworks that we'd been using on this audio app idea had, and just said, you know, early on in discovering NFTs, said, hey, when people are recording their audio clips, can we just convert those to NFTs? And they're like, well, we haven't really done that, but let's try it. Right. So they kind of quickly put together like a very simple mock-up of it. Right. Same thing. They said, well, let us figure out if we can do it versus let's go figure out a way to use external partners. So I said, okay, cool. And just kind of like had that on the, you know, the back of the mind. And so then when really decided, you know, okay, here's a clear vision of some things we could provide as utility and lay a foundation for, you know, kind of expanding upon that, just said to them, hey, let's do this, but let's go through this test together. You guys figure out how to, let's do these contracts. Let's do this, you know, let's do these things and get started. So we went through that together, and that was called the Faded Renegades. It was a fictional project. It was a fictional band in England, and they were fans of a band called The Faded, and the fans were called The Renegades, right? So we just made up this story where the Renegades went to this concert, and they were abducted by a space entrepreneur, Neon Tusk, and he took them off to this planet called Hellebore. And the idea back then, you know, at its, you know, hindsight being how I remember it, the idea back then was just like, let's create a story to prove we can do something. It was a small 2,400 mint at the time when everyone was doing 10,000, because I thought there's no real reason, we don't have a huge following. There's no reason to think that we should focus on trying to, you know, come out of the gate like with hype, right? We should just,
yeah, it was more of a proof of concept.
Yeah. And let's use storytelling and let's get there. Let's at least end up on a planet that's barren, right? Hellebore is that, you know, kind of colorful flower that grows in the darkest, coldest conditions, right? And so let's have we just had a barren planet with this one flower in the middle of it. And we said, now we have an opportunity to build around, okay, you've got a bunch of humans that have landed on this planet. They can't really go outside. It doesn't appear to be that, nice out there. So what are they going to do? Right. And we thought that would be a platform to create brands and create things. And we said, hey, these guys are big soccer fans. They're from England. They can't go outside and play. So the next best thing would be they could sit there and make predictions on what's happening on Earth. And so that was kind of the first brainstorm that led to, oh, we should make a prediction game. Right. And so then kind of shifted towards that. And that was just kind of that brainstorming, curious, organic, like, hey, Southworks, what do you think about? Okay, well, let's spec it out. What would you need? And, and then you just go, then it's just that eternal battle of why isn't this happening faster? Because you keep adding features. No, but why isn't it happening faster? I just told you because you keep adding features. And then, and so that was, so we started working on the game last December. So it's been,
wow.
Yeah.
That's a fast turnaround, actually. Nick, you really have a knack, no pun intended, for being in the right place at the right time, and founding Zappos, just at the exact right time in the early web days. You're still pretty early on in NFTs and sports prediction here in the blockchain space. How do you know when it's the right time to pull a trigger on a new venture?
I think I'm probably a little trigger happy, but I don't, I just kind of go with, my basic thought has been when it feels more painful not to do something than for the potential of it failing, then you should just do it.
Just like a feeling in your gut.
Yeah. You're like, a lot of times I go to sleep every night, right? Thinking I've just thought of the greatest idea ever. It's bigger than anything we're currently working on. And then most of the time you wake up and you're like, okay. The cheeseburger's already been invented or whatever it is, and you're like, that's probably not the best idea. But when you get that one that just keeps coming back, or I think it's like, they say when you buy a white car, when you're driving around, you notice that everyone has white cars, right? Or whatever it is. And so I think it's that same thing. You get an idea in your head and you see things differently. You read something that may not be related, but all of a sudden it triggers more thoughts about that. You feel like everything's connected. And then, I just think I've been really lucky to have, Zappos as an early experience, which kind of allowed me the freedom financially to be able to kind of, do things right. That was obviously something that I don't discount at all. Like I can say, I'm going to go try this for X amount of time, and I'm going to, use this much money. Right. So it's a little bit easier to get started when you're not thinking, okay, how am I going to make ends meet today? Or, right. Okay, where am I going to get some money to just get this very beginning going? But at the same time, that's a blessing and a curse, because it also, it's one less filter. It's one less barrier, right? So sometimes you charge ahead on ideas that that you can't remember why later. But I just think, I think it's just, I'm not incredibly technical. So it probably is something where it's gotta be something where there's enough of it floating around in the world for me to catch on to it, which probably means that I'm a little bit closer to the mass audience understanding it than others. So I'm probably not always that early, which is helpful. Cause again, I think the biggest challenge is remembering things accurately, right? Like revisionist history is so hard. You always look back and you go, we were working on that like 5 years ago, but you're just remembering, you're seeing what's out there now that is popular. And you're remembering what you were working on kind of,
conflating the two.
Yeah. It's the same thing when I try not to beat myself up too bad either about poor decisions, because you say, hey, is it safe to say that in the moment you never made a decision that was bad on purpose? You never said, I've got this data, I've got these circumstances, I've got this opinion, therefore I'm going to do something which doesn't make any sense, right? Usually it's like, no, you see something, you believe it to be true, you look around, you say, this is the best decision right now. So. Yeah, I think it's just being curious, being lucky to be.
Yeah, I like what you said about like, you're like, I'm not like the early adopter, but they also say like in trend trading, for instance, it's like the most dangerous part of the trend is like trying to catch that first 10% and time that last 10% on your exit. So you're just like, hey, very clearly a huge trend has unfolded. It might have already had its first 10%, but there's still the meat of the equation and a lot of meat on the bone to kind of, you know, sink your teeth into, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now the, you know, obviously we're in a bit of a bear, but the, you know, it was, did you see enough to believe, right? Like a lot of, if you just saw an opportunity to make speculative investments and that would only go up, and that's all you saw, then you're probably not looking right now at like, ooh, what's possible, right? But if you saw something else, then you saw it as like, okay, I think this could make a whole bunch of things better. I can't imagine why we would go, why we would just abandon this technology, right? And so there will be opportunity. We just don't know when, you know? Mm. And so you just kind of gotta at least have that core belief. I mean, more people, you know, when the, what was it, the Super Lotto or Powerball, whatever, when that gets high, everyone buys it, right? But more people just go buy a cheeseburger on a daily basis because they know, hey, $4, this is what I'm getting. I'm going to buy this. And so it's like, you're kind of looking for those opportunities where it's like, and I think that'll be the next phase, right? Is the next phase is a fair exchange at the time of purchase, something you feel good about. You're not buying something. I think it's just so stressful to buy something if your only reason for buying it is this expectation that it'll immediately increase in value, or that by buying it, someone will at some point give you something free. You know, like it's okay if you buy it going, hey, I'm going to buy this because I know I'm going to get a free hat or a free t-shirt, or I'm going to get a free, you know, entry into an event. That's fine. But I felt like the stage, which I got caught in up in just like everyone else, of like, we're going to buy these things and they're going to be worth more. And then we're also going to get airdropped these, you know, tokens or coins. And we're going to, you know, it's just like a whole, that wasn't sustainable, you know. But again, with hindsight, in the middle of it, it felt like, shit, this is the new normal. We're going to, you know, we don't have to do anything. All we got to do is buy stuff. So it was, yeah, but no, I think it's,
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand, and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting.
Let's face it, we've all gotten burned by crypto at one point. I mean, I know I have, right? One day you're up 167% or whatever, and the next day you're deep in the red. But remember, great investors know when to reinvest their gains. And this may shock you, but many elite crypto whales are reinvesting their gains into an unexpected alternative asset, and that's blue chip art. So from 1995 to 2021, blue chip art prices outpaced the S&P 500 by 164%. And this could explain why a crypto billionaire recently invested hundreds of millions of dollars into physical art. And even if you aren't flushed with, you know, Bitcoin billions, well, you can still diversify with art like those guys, all right? And with Masterworks, the revolutionary investing app, you can actually invest in art. You can invest in a Warhol or a Banksy, for instance, all for less than a tenth of a Bitcoin. Sounds like a good deal, right? And for a limited time, they're giving Crypto 101 listeners a special offer. And to find out what that special offer is, head to masterworks.io/crypto101. Again, that's www.masterworks.io/crypto101. It's important as well to see the important Regulation A disclosures at masterworks.io/CD. And we're going to put that in the show notes as well. Do you kind of see, like, as somebody who has experience in both sports and now, you know, Web3 NFTs, that Web3 is really going to impact the sports community? Because I know that, like you mentioned, Top Shots, like that really was like the first big NFT game that kind of hit mass market. And do you see lots of opportunity to increase like fan engagement, community building, all that kind of stuff with NFTs?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look at the NFT as the tool, then anything that, you know, people are passionate about and like to engage with and want to get closer to, there's opportunity. I mean, I think with even with Hellebore as an example, we feel like, okay, so right now if I'm a fan of the Warriors, I can play fantasy. I could put them on my team, but like, that's fun, right? I could, you know, there's going to be exciting things. There's going to be, you know, ticketing. I mean, obviously ticketing will have stuff, or, hey, I attended this event, and because they want to know that, they want to know who are our fans and how can we connect with you more often when you're not at the games. I think at a team level, at a league level, at an individual athlete level, right, we've seen, you know, these membership and access, and as long as they do it in the right way where it's not creating too much of a burden for them, I think that's exciting. And then I think at the basic level, an area that we see exciting is just developing new IP, right? Like saying, okay, here's our league IP, and, you know, but a lot of these franchises now, they have, you know, aims to be Disney, right? And it's like, okay, as an example, if the Warriors are going to be Disney, I don't think the Warriors would be Disney. I think the Warriors would be Mickey Mouse within their Disney empire, right? And so we looked at it as like, okay, if we can create a platform where people that are passionate about sports can come in and we can give them more control. So instead of in a fantasy league, you draft your players, then you watch the game, and how the player does is how you do. We thought, well, what if we can create the players? We could use the NFT as the tool there to add control to the player and create value. So now the player in the game is my cyber. And the way I make that player more valuable is by making more correct picks. If I make a correct pick today, my cyber is more valuable in the game I play tomorrow. Whereas in, you know, traditional fantasy, if I pick, you know, Joe Burrow and he has a good game today, it doesn't mean that he's more valuable for me the next week, right? So that was kind of the one key thing. The second thing where I think, you know, obviously.
And when you say more valuable, sorry to interrupt, but like, yeah, when you say that the cyber becomes more valuable, is that his odds get better or
Better. Yeah. So the higher, as the rating goes up, when you then, you know, we have a head to head matchup, right? And I assign him to that match, it tilts the odds in my favor. So we have a little chart that says basically, you know, if your cyber rating is between here and here, you increase the odds 1 point in your favor, 2 points in your favor, whatever. So it's useful for me in my game. I can have a little bit more control because I could say, if I'm better at making picks, then I'll be better at this game, you know, assuming the odds are accurate, that should tilt the odds accurately. We tried to keep it simple. So instead of having to worry about who's the 12th best running back in the league and is he available, we just make it, you know, basic, simple, who's going to win with a spread once you get to a certain level. And then I think, you know, the ownership, right? The ownership sometimes is confusing. It's like, okay, from a non-technical person, you get in, you go, I own all these things. And people are, okay, you know, you talk to your friends and they're like, okay, you own it. What does that mean, right? And so a lot of times we're caught up in, well, if, you know, if Netflix wants, you know, it's like this thing that's like not going to happen very often. And I think as we're starting to see more and more now, any of those IP rights-based projects, it had to become clear where the connection was between who's an investor and who's a holder. And we're seeing more and more that the value, if a project does a big deal, you know, with some, you know, Netflix, something like that, it's not something where it's going to trickle down to your thing. So we thought, okay, but there is still that really exciting value of like, how do I increase the value? And if, and it's got to be something I can control. And so we looked at it like, we could have scarcity, right? You could, like any other collection. Oh, look, this is the only cyber with a, with a, with a pink hat. But that's something that, again, I can't control. I'm just given this thing. But if I could say, you know what, it's going to be much harder to get my cyber up to a plus 10 rating, because that means I have to be right, in essence, 10 days in a row, because I go plus one, plus two, plus three. Oh, but I get one wrong. I'm back down to plus two. So the number of cyber with a plus 10 rating, which are going to have a really dramatic effect on the spread during the game, is going to be much smaller. So now as the holder, I created the scarcity. I had made correct picks, which created the scarcity, which now, once we have players, you know, lots of leagues, people playing all around the world, there should be a marketplace for, okay, I'm in a league. We do it the same as fantasy, where you start a league with friends. We give you some tools. You can enter a, you know, a community wallet or wherever you want to decide how to, how you're going to do prizing. We'll do a little bit of prizing, but really the idea is same as with fantasy. You get together with a bunch of friends. You say, hey, it's going to be $5 each, or hey, it's going to be $50,000 each, right? But we leave that up to the groups. And so if I'm just plugging away, making my daily picks, increasing the value of the cyber, I get it to a plus seven. That's going to be valuable, hopefully, to people all around the world playing a head-to-head matchup where they're like, I got to win my league because there's whatever on the line.
I see.
And so that was, yeah, I was trying to like provide utility, but also control where I can take action. I think the whole idea of taking action and having it affect my asset is the thing that the general population can understand. Because we looked at it and said, we're not going to be able to build what we want to build on the existing NFT community. At least the ones, you know, I don't think. I think the way we would build that would be to just guarantee them that the price was going to go up by them doing nothing and just giving them, right? And so we want to get more into, you know, the broader audience, a much bigger audience, those that are doing sports betting and playing fantasy sports, tap into those audiences and say, hey, here's an alternative. Doesn't replace what you're doing. We just think it's a better way. It's simple. So it's, you know, it should be able to onboard even more people because it's not at the player level, it's just at the team level. And here's how you have control. Here's the utility and the ways you can increase the value of your cyber. But then there's challenges there, right? So we have to make sure that we can, you know, onboard them. Can we onboard them without having a wallet, but still give them the same experience? Can we make all those things? So that's kind of what we've been working on. Just create a real simple game, improve upon the traditional fantasy or pick'em experience, create something new, use the NFT as a tool to make that better instead of the NFT being the be all and end all. And then just keep slowly, you know, evaluating the friction points and lowering those. And okay, what's the next friction? The second thing we did was when we looked at that idea of like, what's a fair exchange on day one? You might say, okay, that's a fair exchange. But like to play a game is cool, but what else? And so what else can we also build that will bridge for the future? And so we created a rewards platform. It's called Moons of Mars. And so once you have your cyber, you connect to the game site to play, but you also connect, you can connect immediately to the Moons of Mars site, and that'll show you if there's any reward attached to your NFT. So like right now for the first, the Genesis Cyber Collection, everyone immediately can claim another cyber from a different collection. And then when you claim that one, you can check that one. And some of those people will have, hey, you've got $25 to spend in our commerce store, or hey, you've got a 6-month streaming fitness program with Daniel Cormier, right? Or you've got a, you know, subscription for coffee, whatever it is. We want to think that's another interesting area. So now we've provided two forms of utility. One is in the game. One is a little bit more traditional. And we think that is kind of the foundation of a pretty good base to be able to explore and stay curious and find things that can tie into that.
I think that's a really smart design. And I love the idea of these powered up NFTs being tradable. You can kind of bring in like a pinch hitter in the bottom of the ninth to try and help you win your league on the last day. Very cool. What are some other games that you play or that you've seen that really inspire you or that you really enjoy and that maybe our listeners should check out as well?
I'm not a huge gamer. I mean, I play I play football, NFL fantasy with a, you know, group of high school friends. I play EPL fantasy with another group, which was actually one of the reasons I decided to simplify it, because I consider myself to be a really knowledgeable EPL fan. I lived in England until I was 8. I actually was able to invest in Leeds United for the Premier League a couple of years ago. I took the same approach to soccer, actually. I guess about 8 years ago, just started a team in the town I was living in Burlingame, went through that process of like, let's see what we can start, like, wow, a third division team. And I invested in a team in Denmark that was kind of a lower level team and was kind of the majority of the money, and just thought, and we kind of watched us get promoted and relegated and all that. But anyways, that going off on a tangent, like, that was, you know, EPL was like, even though I'm super knowledgeable, I was sitting there trying to, you know, put my team together. And I had like, whatever, £4 million left to spend out of my budget. And I'm just sitting there evaluating the three Brighton fullbacks. And I'm like, I don't, even though I'm so into this, I still can't tell you which of those three fullbacks would be a better use of my time. And so I started talking to people in the league and going, hey, this is great, but man, it's like actually really hard. And so that was kind of one of the reasons why I was like, I want something simple where I can do a little bit of research. It's too much to expect me to, I've had a couple of NFT projects, right, where I was like kind of excited about it because of the big picture idea. But then when it came time to like get into land selection or these things, I was like, almost like they sent me a white paper.
Paralyzing.
Like, you know, I'm not a big reader. I'm not this. So, you know, but I like playing like, FIFA and basic Xbox games is kind of the limit of kind of what I've done. But I really do like, I have lived in Vegas for a few years. I really like sports betting. I like fantasy. And so that was where I thought it's just such a fun thing to do. Endless content happening daily. People are super passionate about it. We've just got to find something that's simple enough. People are so busy. We can't say, hey, come play our game. Just go study for a week. You know, it's like, hey, get at the most basic level, give us a minute, connect, see a daily pick with no spread, pick a winner, come back tomorrow, see how you did. Get to the next level. You know what? Make a few picks a day. The line's introduced. Here's a simple explanation of the line if you're not familiar with it. Make your picks. And then finally get to the head-to-head level where you're competing head-to-head, three picks per day against someone else. So that's another thing I think, you know, kind of back to the I'm not overly technical. I'm just, you know, I think I'm fairly simple, you know, probably fairly simple. And so in a way, it helps me focus on just a simple, broader opportunity.
And you're passionate. I mean, you got diverse passions that really intersect. And I think one of the cool kind of like secular trends that is a really strong tailwind to what you're building with Hellebore is kind of like the legalization of sports betting, at least here in America. I know California is still like behind the eight ball. I'll get your opinion on how that's going to play out in the timeline and stuff. But like, you know, it, you know, if we just look back 10 years ago, like this would have been a thing that would have been like illegal to do. And now it's like totally on par. What's kind of the landscape of sports betting from your viewpoint?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So back in 2018, I had a couple of friends and we were approached by one of the attorney from Washington, D.C., who was kind of leading the legalization of sports betting thing. And he approached us and said, hey, I think there's an opportunity for maybe a pure play startup to come in into this space. And so we went out, we met with some of the casino companies, met with Penn National, a couple others. We went out to New Jersey, we met with the state regulators, and we tried to really learn about it. And we just felt like, this is like exciting, but also we will have no control of our destiny. Like, we have to wait for each state to get opened up. We have to submit this 1,000-page, you know, personal background application. All of the sports bets, online sports bets in New Jersey have to go through one server room. So it was like this, there was already issues of like, hey, well, at least in 2018, they're like, there's issues of how many bets we could take. Then you had to go to a casino company who had skins, you know, they had to apply for skins, and they had the ability then to transfer a skin to a third party to use to skin their online sports bet. So we just looked at it and we're like, man, that's a lot. You know, that's a lot, and it's going to be expensive, and there's going to be really big players coming in, and we're at the mercy of a lot of people and their decisions. One feedback we got from speaking to, you know, when we got in with some of the people at the casino companies, I can't remember the name of the second one we met with, But the things that stuck with me was one guy was telling us, he created this very simple daily parlay card that's on the back of all the newspapers in England, right? I think he did it at Betfred. And that's what I latched onto, was like all this other stuff, all these things. Hey, this very simple thing that everyone in the country can understand, which was basically at the time, and I probably still have it. Here's a list of all the games this Saturday. Pick as many as you think there won't be any goals. Any game where you think there'll be 0-0, and you just do a triple parlay card. You know, if you pick three, here your payout. If it happens, pick five. And he was like, that was the one big thing. And so I just left that meeting thinking, okay, you just need to keep it very simple, something that the broadest possible audience can understand. The second thing was, another guy said, listen, guys, I've been doing this for a long time. If I were you, we were talking about like applying for one of their skins. He's like, if I was you guys, I would just build a free-to-play and just attract an audience. And then when it's legal everywhere, then I would just see what your opportunities are, right? You're either going to have an audience that's valuable to an existing company, or you're going to be able to turn on betting if you want to through a process, which will probably be a little, you know, a little clearer at that point. So those were the two things that always stuck with me and that I tried to latch onto. I think I saw in California, I think we have a vote coming up on sports betting. I haven't followed it too closely, but like, I don't know if it's, you know, how widespread it is or if it's limited to certain areas. But my assumption is there's so many things that are becoming legalized, and just, you know, it just makes sense to sports betting, another one of those. I mean, you got to put checks and balances in place. You got to provide for support. You got to make sure you're not enabling people that, you know, aren't able to, you know, keep it together. Yeah. But I think that it's coming. It'll just be very, you know, everything's slow, right? Everything is slow. And especially when it's state by state and all that, but I think it'll be exciting. I think you have, I think it wasn't at the, is it maybe the Wizards that are opening a sports book inside their arena? You know, when you go to England, I grew up as a big Tottenham fan. So I went to a game in the last stadium, White Hart Lane, and I was sitting in this, it was like this restaurant you could sit in and a little bit fancy. Figured we're going over there, let's get this experience. And the waitress just comes up to you the same way as she's handing your menu and hands you a little card you can fill out and place your bets.
Place your bets, baby.
Yeah. You want to get your awesome. Bets in. And I didn't understand what it was. I missed the thing. But then I went back to another game, and you'd walk around the same way you'd walk up and get a beer and a hot dog. You walk to the next stand and you place your bets. And I think it's just a part of that culture. But I think, I think probably, you know, blockchain helps that. I mean, it's very, makes things very clear, right? Who's doing what, who did what. Hopefully that could remove a little bit of the stuff, you know, the behind the scenes stuff that people are worried about. So, but I don't have a great answer on that. I just think that it's probably, you know, it appears to be something that's coming generally, right? Once it happens in one state, eventually it will happen everywhere. So,
yeah, no, I definitely think you're spot on there. It's only a matter of time, and you know, once the floodgates are open, kind of like on the federal level, every state is just gonna. So I guess one of my other questions here is just kind of around something Mark Cuban had mentioned about using NFTs as tickets, or having tickets to get in and out of games as NFTs. Can you kind of unpack what that might look like, and if there's any maybe cool companies that are working on that kind of stuff?
I know there are. I know there are companies working on it. I know there was a guy who used to be the head of marketing for the Warriors, Kenny Lauer, I think his name. I saw that he's at one, a startup in Oakland that's kind of working on, blockchain ticketing. I think it's interesting. I think, teams are already thinking the same way, right? The Warriors they set up their own resale marketplace because they looked at it and said, hey, why are we not sharing in the secondary sales if it's just on, you know, Ticketmaster or StubHub, whatever, right? So they went and said, hey, let's set up something through partner with Ticketmaster, but do something where we control the secondary market, or not control, but we have a, you know, our big players in our own secondary market. And if you look at the revenue they generated, obviously the Warriors are a little bit the exception as far as, you know, the revenue they're able to generate at the moment, but like that was a big shift for them. They saw like significant revenue coming in from the secondary market. And so obviously NFTs with the ability to, you know, just automate that, like, hey, if that ticket ever gets resold, it goes back. is interesting. I think, you know, it's much easier to attach, you know, perks, right, to an NFT than it would be to a paper ticket, or I did, you know, even just a thing you scan. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll be interesting. I mean, I think it's kind of one of the reasons also why we are excited about the rewards slash shopping platform we have, is I think that's the thing, is like over time, it's like, I'm going to buy this thing. I'm not even going to, there's a lot of that chatter, right? Well, do we need to rename it? You know, will things not be called NFTs? I think it'll just get to the point where you don't even think about it, whether you call it an NFT or not, it's just this thing. And so I think it'd be great, right? If we worked with a team in the future, and instead of our focus with the team right now, you know, the traditional path would be like, hey, can we use your logo? Can we, when we have a cyber in our game, can he wear a Warriors jersey? I think that's interesting. That might be fun to some people, but it'd be much more interesting to think of, you know, things where it's like, hey, let's create some unique IP, some characters or something, or some membership or some club that is exclusive to this. Let's let them interact in with a game, but then let's also, you know, tap into this reward site and let them claim digital rewards, or maybe that's where I redeem my ticket, or maybe you know, I get a special offer right before, or I get, you know, access to merch that other people don't have access to. And then, you know, the beauty is you can keep expanding upon that, right? If you find someone with a ticket and you give them something, it's harder to follow up with them 6 months later and say, "How I'd like to give you something else, or I'd like to reactivate this." But once they own that NFT, it's, you know, easy to now, you know, as long as there's a place to go, right? The challenge is, how do you let everyone know, you know, like, I mean, Discord, right? But like most of us, Discord's a little bit of a necessary evil. Right? Most of us aren't going into Discord that don't enjoy it naturally, didn't grow up with it, right? I find that it's very hectic for me. Like, in fact, the busier it gets, so you want it to get busier, but the busier it gets, the more confusing it gets for everyone. And so I think that once we can solve that problem, which is one of the thoughts we had, is like, if we can have a place where you go on a daily basis to do something, then that gives us a daily touch point to also present you with something else or put something else in front of you. So I think that's an interesting thing for that we're hoping, whether it's ticketing or, you know, collectibles or memberships, merch, whatever it is, if we can, you know, combine, we've got this utility, we've got this game, we've got this rewards site with partners, and then, you know, that have an audience that need to use it, and then we can do some really fun stuff together, I think is the is what I got from it. So I'm assuming, yeah, I think everything will change. I think, but we need the masses, right? That's kind of one of our focuses. What we look at is like, we've got to be a project that onboards people, right? So we're, you know, we put our what's called a beta up, and we got some users in, and we saw it's the hardest thing. You're building and you're thinking about it every day, and then things become obvious to you. And it's really hard to say, well, how to understand which things are no longer obvious, right? So you got to bring some people in, and then you say, okay, what wasn't obvious, right? So for us, there was, you know, some stuff with a wallet. So like, okay, let's make the, you know, so we should be releasing soon where you won't need a wallet, but they'll still be your NFTs. You'll still be able to, you know, when you do decide, oh, this is pretty fun, or I'm seeing other people reselling theirs, I'm not able to resell mine because I don't have a wallet. Let me just create a wallet and connect. Or, you know, we're going to shift towards, let's just do free claims, because the most important thing for us is not you discovering each level. It's you having enough to play wherever you want right away. Right. And so those things, and if we can kind of play that role in, and also that, well, I think the most important thing is the fair transaction, which obviously if it's free, that's a fair transaction. But when we get into, you know, there's a little bit more of a marketplace, we'll never mint out. They'll never be like, oh, the cyber are all gone, right? Mm. It's just, our vision is there'll be like weekly collections dropping and dropping and dropping and supplementing what the marketplace has. So if there's no cyber, if people are having a really hard time getting their cyber up to a +6, then we can always say, hey, you know what? We're going to drop a collection this week. Each cyber in this collection is going to have a guaranteed +4 to +7 rating. And here's the price, right? Or, hey, we're going to drop a cyber this week and everyone's going to be guaranteed to get X. But we want the holders to dictate that. So if we saw, oh, look, now there's a lot of holders that are getting up to a +6, they're starting to list them. you know, we don't want to compete with our holders. So get rid of those ones. But now, you know what? There's a whole bunch of cyber that are like, I don't know, like negative five that people are kind of discarding because they don't think it's worth it. You know, it's too much. It's not worth the effort to get back to zero. They would rather just grab a new one. So what could we do with those negative fives, right? Is there something we could do to kind of create interest in those or encourage people to try to rehabilitate them? But I think it's, whether it's ticketing, whether it's, you know, playing this new kind of prediction game or whatever it is, anything from the larger world that comes in, I think for it to be sustainable and not to create this fear, it's got to be a fair transaction on day one. You know, this was a fair transaction, regardless of what happens from here on out. I feel good about it and not just pure speculation. So that's what we've been trying to work on.
I love it. So if somebody wants to get involved, you know, how does somebody go from listening to this podcast to getting involved in playing Hellebore?
Yeah. So they can go to playhellebore.com. They can follow us on Twitter at playhellebore. You can follow me. I'm at Coast Hawk on Twitter. We'll be, implementing some, I don't know when this will air, but we'll be implementing stuff. I think most likely by the time they're listening to this,
absolutely,
they'll be able to hop in, claim their free cyber, everything they need to just get in and start playing. And then, hopefully experience the game, check out the rewards. And if all goes well, grab some friends and start their own league. You know, and that's the model, right? We want them to have fun, be something they want to share with their friends and say, hey, you know what, this would be a great addition to my high school fantasy group or my work friends fantasy group or my friends over here with fantasy is too intimidating. Let's just start a simple prediction league together or go join one, you know, that other people have set. So that's our vision. And excited. Really appreciate you guys having me on. I enjoyed it,
man.
Time flew by.
Yeah, this is, it's been crazy. It's I love being able to hear just somebody who's been through, you know, so many, you know, companies, right? And has his hands in so many different projects. I mean, we didn't even talk about Basecamp, which was something that you founded, which was, you know, a very popular project management software. And there's so much more that we could take this, but we are running up against time here. The last question I have for you, it's kind of one that we ask to everybody that comes on the show. And it's a pretty simple one, but it's just like, hey, if this is the first podcast that somebody was listening to that had anything, you know, anything to do with crypto and NFTs, what would be your one word of advice?
I think it would just be kind of go back to that. Be curious, you know, but take baby steps, you know, be curious and take little steps and figure out what you like about it. And then either do more of that, or maybe you stumble upon an opportunity where there isn't more of that. And that creates opportunity for you to do something. But I think it's just get in there, get started. You can read about stuff. You can talk about stuff. You can plan stuff, but you just got to jump in and get involved. You'll meet a bunch of great people. And it was so early that, I can't think of a better environment right now to spark ideas that might be possible. You know, there's a lot of places where you go out and you're like, I got a great idea, but is it possible? Is it needed? Whereas this is so new. It seems intimidating at first, but it's really not. There's a lot of great people that are willing to, you know, offer advice if you reach out. I think it's just the perfect place for curious people to get in, learn, brainstorm, and become the creators of the future. That's what, I'm always excited about tomorrow. I really hate talking about yesterday because it's like, that already happened, you know, like we probably don't even remember it accurately. Let's focus on today and tomorrow. And I think this is the best space for that at the moment.
Love it. Well, man, Nick, thanks so much for your time. And we hope to have you back on soon. I'll see you on Hellebore. I'll grab my cyber and we'll stay in touch.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, great meeting you guys. And love to do it again.
Gauchos for the win as soon as college sports get added.
Hey, we got a big soccer match against Stanford tomorrow, so yep. we should put that in there. So
there you go.
All right, everybody listening at home, hope you enjoyed. Hope you're having a great rest of your day, and stay tuned because we got some more guests coming up later this week.
Ciao.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.